Before I get started, is there anything that anyone on the team might want to discuss first?
Just so you know who's here, so Andrew's here, Peter, Howard, and Scotty. So Patty finishes her vacation today. She'll be back tomorrow. So she's two calls behind, so the recording and the email from last week and then an email today will help her catch up for next week.
Okay. I did get a – when I sent out that stuff I sent to you yesterday, she's got her email set up, so she let me know that she wasn't going to be in the office. You mentioned the videos. Are you all watching the videos?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to point out that they're designed to match – exactly with the material. The video, first week's video matches chapter one in the Supernova manual. I just want to point out that in some cases, it's not always going to link up with the video. For example, one of the things that is on the video in week three is about the five-star leadership model.
Okay.
I don't get to that until later in Supernova. It's just... to me, it's a little bit the cart before the horse, but it's important you still watch them because all the material in there will get covered sometime during Supernova. But, again, it's important. All right, let's do a quick update on the goals for the segmentation portion of Supernova. One, it reduced the practice to its core. You told me last week that Scott had responsibility for 128 households. Howard had responsibility for 130. However, that included Butler's. And my question is, after the exercise last where we looked at your practice, high to low by assets in production, were you able to reduce the number of clients or have a plan to reduce the?
I would say we're working on it. So we did one version that I went from 130 to like 90, and I gave Peter another edit yesterday. So I'll probably take it down another 10 or 12. And then Scotty went from 128 to like about same thing about 92.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still on that process, but that process was simple, putting the right households together. I would say Scott and I still need to go the process of talking about the next step as far as people to possibly transition and or the Butler conversation. So I think it's a little longer process for us.
Is there like a limit on how many Butlers you want to have? Because, I mean, this Butler thing can get out of control.
Well, as Rob Knapp says, advisors hide clients under the rug sometimes so we can't see them. Here, the answer is, well, you've got to make sure you understand the definition of a Butler. Who asked that question?
Peter.
Peter, you got it. A Butler, and I think we touched on this a little last time. A Butler is somebody you have to keep. It's not where you put somebody you want to give a different level of service. With Supernova, we have one level of service. That's 1242, rapid response, and multi-generational and fully implemented planning. Then we have a category for people who we have to keep. They don't need 1242, but they still need to have contact, your best client's daughter, whatever. So if the way you asked that question, it sounded to me like you weren't asking about Butlers. You were asking about can you give small accounts Butler-type service. Did I get that right?
Sort of.
Well,
here's
what I would say. Being a consultant is much easier than running an office. Being a consultant, I tell you what I think is in your best interest. It's up to you to execute. If you keep small accounts who don't fit the Butler definition in your practice, it doesn't give you the additional freedom you need to provide a higher level of service to your clients and create the time to grow, which your team is certainly capable of doing. So I'm not trying to evade your question. If you're talking about the answer, if you're talking about real Butlers, people you have to keep, a rough rule of thumb is 10%. If you got 100 clients, you might have 10 Butlers. You might have 9, you might have 11, but that's a rule of thumb.
So So
Peter,
you
asked a simple question. It wasn't a simple answer.
No, it wasn't. So if you've got, let's say, let's have 10 per 100, and we've got over 10, and, like, how do you determine that next step?
Well, again, I don't know if we're communicating. A butler, you don't say, okay, I can have 10. Who are they going to be? It's the process is, who do I have to keep?
Right.
And if your top 10 clients each had 5 children who all have relationships with you, then the answer is 50.
Right, okay.
You don't start with filling up the 10 bucket. You start with, who do I have to keep?
Right.
But to be fair, Rob, you have to have honest conversations. They have to be true accommodations that you have to keep, not just people you want to give different service to. I think that's a really clear separation of what we have to have. Those are honest conversations we have to have that we, Scott and I, need to do through 1 through 200, and then Peter and Andrew need to have the homework assignment of taking the 200 households that are here and saying, who are the clients who are time-consuming, difficult, mean, whatever it may be, that they think are up for possible transition?
Yes.
They don't have to tell us the 200 we need to keep. They just need to tell us the people that are difficult for whatever reason.
Yes. I mean, that helps you make the right decision.
Correct. Okay. So we're a little lax on that part as far as, you know, getting – we had to get the householded names correctly, which we've done. Now we need to go through the possible transition list and then the difficulty list and labeling properly.
So I guess one more question, just some understanding of this, is you know, for example, we have, let's say, your household that has, let's say, like 5 or 6 butlers underneath it. Those 6 butlers in the year of time could take as much time as one household.
Give it a
count. As when you're counting number of households you have to service per year, are we not discounting ourselves by saying, well, we're throwing these guys as butlers underneath this, you know, underneath this super household guy, or this, you know, your premium guy, and here's your second tier service guys. There's 6 of them underneath the premium, but those 6 for a full year takes up the time of one premium. So when you're saying you're trying to reach to 100 true households, is what you want to, you know, what's your growing space, and what you know, how much space can you grow? We're really counting 92 of, you know, we say, you know, we cut it down to 92 because we throw these smaller households as butlers underneath a bigger one. But if those end up being 50 households, additional households, aren't we saying, hey, if it's 6 per one premium, now you just divide 6 divided by 50 and you've added more households back in. So your room for growth has actually shrunk. I mean, basically what I'm trying to get at, are we kidding ourselves by throwing them underneath these premium people? And I'm looking at this from a service standpoint, not only the growth standpoint.
You have to stop talking in generality.
Okay.
And what we have to do is not on this call with Rob, but if you have a specific household question, we should talk about those as live people, because every situation has a reason for being here,
right,
and we have to discuss why. So just to say in general, and you're getting hung up on a butler 10 versus 20 versus 30, we have to have an honest conversation, and we have to talk about the service level those people will be receiving and understand what that means.
Okay.
So just to throw out numbers doesn't make sense.
Right.
But there was some math there that does make sense. If you have a butler, and if you're giving your butlers semi-annual contact with one portfolio review, in other words, 2-1, it 6 butlers take the same time as one client who's receiving Supernova service. That's true.
Right.
So every 6 butlers you keep that you don't have to, not going to go through it again. I think the math is correct.
So one of the things that I talked to Cindy about, Rob, was you guys had some Excel to keep track of all this, because we have our own crazy database from ACT to Excel to Access and so forth, and it's, you know, it's a little convoluted. Do you guys have a tool that's going to help us?
We do. It's an Excel spreadsheet that does a lot of things, but part of that is helping you schedule your butlers. We usually do that in week 5. It's not one of our scheduled calls. It's a call with whoever in the team is going to be responsible for the scheduling and anyone else who wants to be on the call. So
okay.
Why don't we just talk about that for a second? I can go ahead and get that scheduled a week early if you want to do that, who's going to be responsible?
Patty's going to be the scheduler. She's not here, but you know, I probably want to listen just to listen, because one thing I was thinking about, Rob, is one of our assignments, and I don't know if we were supposed to do it, was we were supposed to start contacting the top 20. Well, I don't want to have a random, I don't know where I'm going to keep track of all this, and I don't want to be in the database business, so I don't want this in six different places. So my point was I wanted to start using a tool that we all had the same naming and nomenclature, and maybe I'm a week or two early. I just wanted to be consistent.
Well, you are a week or two early, and it does say in the homework to start calling people. We're not quite ready to do that yet.
That's what I thought. So I just got nervous
really
about keeping us on track.
Who should Cindy reach out to schedule this scheduling call?
Patty.
Okay. All right. Well, if you will just let Patty know that Cindy Bowie is going to either email her, and I've got her email address, or call her to set up the time. But I'll get that message to Cindy right after our call. All right.
Perfect. That'll be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. But I had this conversation a minute ago with a fellow in New York. The hardest thing for me is when I move ahead and the advisors haven't quite built the foundation yet for me to move ahead. So I just want to make sure that the foundation here, as far as the number of households, is you've got right now. Howard's at 90, Scott is at 92. There's going to be some tweaking of that number, but as far as the commitment to bring your practice down to its core, that commitment is there.
The commitment is there, Rob. My question to you, without derailing the process, was: do we need an extra week, you know, to get our ducks in a row rather than keep moving ahead?
Well,
I'm not
the answer is that you know that Howard, both you and Scott know that there, you know 50 people that for sure are going to stay in your practice, right?
Exactly. Yes.
You can start with those people while you're doing the you're doing the work on the other end. So if each of you had 100, just making that number up, that's 20%.
Yeah.
Is 20. You could work on those 20 and then begin to bring get rid of the people who aren't going to fit in your practice. So
fair enough. I just
get
I just didn't want you to.
You don't have to have the core people exactly identified to start calling the clients you know are going to be part of your practice.
Perfect, because I was worried about not having the exact number, and you're right. We can start at the top, and we'll meet in the middle by the time we're done.
And for me, I don't think it's an ethical violation to say to a client, I have significantly reduced, or I'm significantly reducing the number of people in my practice. If they're still in your practice, you just haven't gotten rid of them yet. Once you make that mental part of your brand, when you roll this out with your clients, is we have significantly reduced, or we're in the process of significantly reducing our practice. So once you've committed to the process, then you can ethically say that to a client.
And then, Rob, the other elephant in the room is, as we start with the top, there's going to be some clients that aren't going to want 12-4-2, who are great clients who we love to have, but just time, interest, passion, whatever, they're
okay.
Not going to want that.
Okay.
And
I'm going to go to page two and then circle back. Okay. Here it is. Common sense. Common sense has served everybody on this call well. Failure to use common sense has served you not so well. So you got to mix common sense into here. So here's the process. You pick up the phone, you call a client, and you say something along the lines of, from time to time, we take a step back and look at our practice. We've been doing that over the last couple of weeks and are making some refinements. We're excited about them. Do you have a minute for me to share it with you? That's, if you want to use that, that's fine. I'm just giving you an example of how you might want to put it in context. Some people have said, We have been working with an outside consultant to make some refinements to our practice. He's made some suggestions. We're really excited about it. Here's what it's going to look like. I don't care what you all say to start it, but I think you kind of
right.
You got to put it in context.
Yeah.
Here it is. Here is you talk about what you do. You talk about the fact that you've significantly reduced the number of clients in your practice. You talk about having established a minimum. We've got a minimum because we got to control the capacity of our practice so that the service we're giving to existing clients is never compromised. You know, we've had that conversation. So, and you say, you know, you go through the monthly schedule contact. So, and the parts of the Supernova model. I'm talking too fast. I'm going to slow down. I got time.
What page were you referring to, by the way?
I wasn't referring to any page. I don't think I referred to any page.
Oh, you know, you said page two. I think you're just saying
in general. Never mind. Go ahead. Keep going. We got you.
Okay. So you say that you go through your service model. Clients get excited about it. I could tell you some great stories about people bringing in assets just by telling them they're going to keep. They're going to provide an enhanced service model at an FA with Morgan Stanley in Cincinnati, save a $5 million account when he told the people about the refinements he was making to his practice, monthly contact, all those things. And they said, if you do those things, we won't move our business. That was on the process of going out. So as you go into these calls, know these are going to be great conversations. They're going to get more of your time. They're part of a smaller practice. It's all good. Now, to get to the question, what if clients give you some pushback? So let's walk through it. First part, we talk about all these refinements, great refinements, and your client says, well, aren't you doing those things already? You got to accept that's a pretty big compliment. So your
right.
response to that is, thanks for saying that. We're putting some structure into our practice so that we never disappoint you. Got it?
I'm close.
Tell me when to go.
Thanks for saying that. We are putting...
They say, aren't you doing those things already? Your response is, thanks for saying that. We're putting some structure into our practice so that we never disappoint you.
Right.
Okay. Now, here's the next step. Well, you know, Howard, I don't think I want that monthly contact. I don't think I need that. Here's the suggested response. I understand it's different. I think it's important. Could you try it for 3 months, and if it still feels like too much, we'll dial it back? Want me to go through that again?
Yeah.
I know the client says, I don't think I need monthly contact. I know it's different. I think it's important. Could you try it for 3 months? And if it still feels like too much, we'll dial it back.
Sounds very logical.
Well, it is logical. And here's why it's logical. If you called a client with an investment idea and they brought up an objection and you said, well, you know, I'll call you back when I find something better. You've just demonstrated to that client, in my opinion, that you didn't have the confidence in the idea that you should because you didn't defend it.
Right.
It's the same with this. If you say to a client, I think it's important, could you try it out, and then if it feels like too much, we'll dial it back, you're defending your idea. If you just cave and say, oh, okay, we won't do that, you didn't
right.
really have confidence in this service model. Got it?
Right. Got it.
So here's the third step. Your client looks deep in your eyes and says, Scott, listen to me closely. I do not want scheduled monthly contact. Well, here's common sense. Scott says, I hear you. I didn't get to this part in my career stage of my career by not listening to my clients. could we schedule the quarterly reviews? Because you're not going to say to a client, well, if you don't sign up for this, you're fired. I mean, that would be stupid.
Right.
That wouldn't be stupid, but wouldn't make sense to me. So, Scott, I do not want monthly scheduled contact. I hear you. I didn't get to this point in my career by not listening to my clients. Could we go ahead and schedule the quarterly reviews? And I've never had an FA say a client wouldn't schedule the quarterly reviews. Now,
right.
Maybe it's happened. I just haven't been told.
Right.
So here's what happens. The client has the quarterly reviews on their calendar. On your calendar, you have all 12 contacts. You're going to call them. It's just not scheduled on the non-review months.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Fair enough.
And I think that covers almost every and if a client at that point says, well, I just want to keep doing what we're doing now, I don't want to do it, then I think I would still set them up on the monthly calls, just none of them are scheduled. But
right.
You got to that's I don't want to we're putting structure to the practice so we never disappoint you. Could you try it for 3 months if it still feels like too much, we'll dial it back. And finally, I hear what you're saying. I didn't get to this stage in my career by not listening to my clients. Could we schedule the quarterly reviews? And I think that'll cover 99% of any responses, any pushback that you might get. You okay with that?
Yeah, very helpful. Thank you.
Good, good. All right. So back to page one, talking about the parts of segmentation, the first 4 weeks. We've hit on the number of clients. I have confidence you're going to get it done. You don't have to have it all done in order to start calling the clients. The second thing we wanted to accomplish in the first 4 weeks is establish a minimum and a target minimum. The last number I have written down is you have an absolute minimum of $500,000, unless there are extenuating circumstances. You all might want to add if it's something that you want, or they can hit $500,000 within a year.
Right.
Go beyond. If you go beyond a year, it's starting to sound to me like you really don't have a minimum. So your absolute minimum is $500,000 unless they're extenuating circumstances. And then the target minimum, and you remember we went through that exercise last week where you looked at your top 10 clients and looked at the average, and that was around $10 million. Having said that our absolute minimum is $500,000, it's important that you know that a large part of a disproportionate share of our business comes from clients who have $10 million and more. And that's an honest statement. All right. Now, so let me Scott, real quickly, you get a call from a center of influence and a CPA, whatever, and they say, I've got somebody that I want to refer to you, but before I do it, tell me what your minimum is. How would you respond to that?
That our minimum is $500,000 unless there's extenuating circumstances that we would review.
Okay. All right. That's it. Our minimum is $500,000 unless there are extenuating circumstances. If this is somebody who gives you a referral from time to time, they already know that you deal with people a lot bigger than that, so you don't have to go through the target thing unless you want to. CPA in Colorado calls a UBS FA who's just changed her minimum from 250 to 500, and he asks her that question. I've got somebody I think you would like. Tell me what your minimum is before I put you all together. This is somebody who had referred to her before. And instead of saying 500 like she had agreed to, she didn't want to appear ungrateful, and she said 250, and the CPA's response was it's that little. So your minimum says a lot about you. You got to be firm with that minimum. Okay. So you've got the minimums down. Now, define your ideal client. Your ideal client is your minimum plus the personality traits that you told me in week one. Friendly, follow our advice, kind and respectful to all team members, need help beyond investments, which leads to you want to be the quarterback. Trust and willing to learn. That's your ideal client. They meet your minimum, and they're friendly, follow your advice, so on and so forth. When you define what you're looking for, it makes you stronger in a referral situation. They know you don't take everybody. You're not out there promising the moon to get anything that you can. We take people. They got to have $500,000 unless they're extenuating circumstances, and they have to have a majority of these traits that we really love in our best clients. And then the final part, the fourth thing for these 4 weeks, and it's where we've been spending a little time today, is to start making the calls, letting your clients know about the refinements to your practice. Now, I ask you to start working on that. Scott, did you have a chance to put down any bullet points or any script?
Well, I looked at the scripts you refer us to in the book, but I haven't written anything down. So the couple scripts in week two of page 106 and so forth, I've read through those a few times, but I haven't written any other bullet points down.
I also sent you a Word document that says bullet points for retained clients or something like that. Okay. So here's what I Howard, did you have a chance to work on that?
I did, but I didn't print it. So I took there. You had three different ones of FAs, and then I took, I think it was the third one, and I called it my own, but I didn't print it. But yes, I kind of worked on a little script.
Okay. What I want you to do, and this is really important, is to get that, whether you do it in bullet point form or in
right.
script form, but you got to get that script put together and you got to practice it among yourselves and be ready next week to start making those calls to your clients. I don't want you making those calls until you've got the bullet points. And it's just like anything else, folks, and I think I
yep.
mentioned this before, you've got something that you're batch processing with a client, with a bunch of clients, the first one is a little choppy, the second one is a little better, and by the time you've done it three times, it's in your own words, you don't need your script, it just flows. So that's where I need you to be. I need you to have those scripts or bullet points put together so you make sure that you're getting across to your clients the importance of these refinements, the importance for them refinements. Y'all okay with that?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, it's a good plan. You got a few more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay,
two.
Let's. I ask you to bring the names of six people who could be centers of influence. While I don't go into acquisition full time until week nine. I want you to start thinking about people who could be referring to you. Give me one first name, Scott.
I'm Ed.
Okay, what makes Ed a possible center of influence for you?
Well, he's a newly retired attorney who's relocated in southern Florida, who's been an advocate and a source of referrals for many years.
Okay. Here is the question I will always ask you when we talk about centers of influence. And that question is, can they specifically describe what you do? They can say, you know, Scott's a great guy. He's been doing this for a while. You really need to talk to Scott. All those are good things to say. But can Ed say, describe your practice? They have a concierge practice for a limited number of people. They offer monthly scheduled contact. The specifics that really set you all apart. Does Ed have that? Can Ed specifically describe your practice?
Yes and no. I mean, to the extent that we articulate what we do is a lot different than what the client himself. And Ed's a client of ours also, so he would be a supernova client of ours. You know, so he'll get he's certainly in line for. Understanding how we've redefined our practice. So, but he understands we have quarterly meetings with him. We, manage his money. I work with his daughters, which would be butlers. So he's a perfect, I would say that he certainly can articulate, knows we don't do trading, we don't do, options, we're not going to just hold stock. So I would say that he understands our practice and our philosophy, 80% of it.
Okay. All right. But you understand the importance of giving Ed the tools.
Absolutely, because again, you know, you want it to the best of your knowledge. Again, then you know, you want it to be pre-screened referral to the best you can.
You hit on a really important point, Scott, that if somebody is a client, they're going to live the experience and be better able to describe it for clients for possible referrals. But some COIs are not, centers of influence are not clients, so you have to be more intentional with them, making sure they understand your practice.
Absolutely. Because they don't live what the experience has been over the years. Absolutely.
Okay. And one thing we will work on later in Supernova is a one-page overview of your practice, which is a terrific piece to have to give to centers of influence.
That'd be great.
Howard, give me one name, first name of someone who could be a COI for you.
David.
Okay, what makes David a candidate to be a COI?
Because we have mutual clients together. He sees the service we do. He is not a client, but he has the opportunity to work with clients that would be in our ideal client makeup. And I just think we need to articulate to him what we're looking for so that he knows better to send us who those people are. But I think being an accountant, he's got opportunity to make suggestions to clients who aren't getting what they deserve, who could be, you know, fit our ideal client or our target client.
Okay, good, good. So I'm not going to go through all the other five that y'all have brought. I just want you to get into the thought process of thinking about people who could be centers of influence for you and making sure that that those people can specifically describe your practice.
No, right. You have a great point because, you know, if we look at our list and Howard looks at his list, they're going to be divided into two camps. You know, one camp is going to be clients and people that are spheres of influence that we work with and that are service. And the other are, as you pointed out, the accountant, the CPA, the attorney, or whomever else who's not a client then that probably doesn't understand our business as well and need to articulate that. I mean, I think, you know, 9 out of 10 of your spheres of influence are either going to be current clients and referrals, or they're going to be non-clients, and that's a great point.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to refer someone when you can't describe anything except they're honest and you
right,
like
them. Nice
right, right.
And I work out with him in the gym. He's a nice guy.
Well, I had that the other day. A guy in the gym selling his business. He comes up and he says, "What do you do?" And we haven't been friends with the guy for 10 years, and we never talk about it because, it's, you know, we're there at a social thing. Well, he's, you know, selling his business and wants to sit down, and we're, you know, starting the whole process.
Well, the best response I ever heard, and this was from a UBS FA down in Texas, when he's asked what he does, he said, I manage risk for affluent investors.
And that's good.
It's really good because what that is in its most base form is asset allocation. That's one of the ways you manage risk is to make sure that people, we go back to the emotion conversation, Scott, make sure people don't get outside their risk tolerance. Okay, let me move ahead here. Okay, I sent you all something, and it's called 12 Topics Financial Advisors Can Discuss with Clients.
Yeah.
Y'all have that in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the purpose of this list? Well, let me tell you what it isn't. This isn't something you put in your client folder, your blue client folder, we'll get to that in the next couple of weeks, and say, okay, I'm going to start checking these off.
Right.
This is a reminder that if every conversation you have with every client is about dollar signs and decimal points, you're probably not developing that relationship to the depth that you would like to have. Talked to an FA, the FA I mentioned in New York earlier today. He played golf with a client last week. He said, we didn't talk business at all. Didn't talk business but one time. So I want you to always be sure that you are getting to know the client beyond the balance sheet. There's some really good questions in here.
Yeah.
let me give you one. And let, Howard, let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
If all jobs paid the same, what would you have done for a living?
Somebody just asked that. What would be your – oh, I know. Some eighth grader kid was asking me about my career and said, what would I do if I wasn't doing this job? And I couldn't answer. I have to think about that. If all jobs paid the same, what would I do different?
Well, no, what would you do for a living? It's the same
what
thing.
Would I do for a living? Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just,
well,
I mean,
your passion?
I mean, my what I'm passionate about is I'm passionate about helping people and making connections. That's what I'm passionate about.
I get that. If all jobs paid the same and you couldn't be in this business, what would it be?
I honestly never thought about it.
Okay, ask me.
Rob, if all jobs paid the same, what would you be?
Oh. Well, thank you for asking. Here's what I would be. I would be the high school, be the basketball coach. I played basketball a lot of my life. And the history teacher. I love history. I love World War II history. I've been to the battle, the beaches of Normandy 3 or 4 times. My sweet wife says she won't go anymore. I love Second World War history. Now, you know something about me. There are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of. Why do you have that interest? Well, my dad was in the Second World War. So you see how you get to know a person with that question. You start to get to know a person a little bit better.
Right.
Another question on here, you know, what's on your bucket list? Scott, what's on your bucket list?
that I can never do or that is reasonable?
Doesn't matter.
Riding the Tour de France.
Are you training for that right now?
No.
So maybe that's the
answer. But it tells you something about me, though. It does.
Exactly right. It's
not realistic, but it does.
Yeah. So here's the point, and I'll say it again. The point is not for you to ask every one of these questions and call me in 2 years and say, hey, Rob, I've gone through all 12 topics and all the questions. It's
right.
For you to always be thinking about getting to know the client beyond the balance sheet. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Okay, let me see. Okay, I got one other thing, I think. I think we've already touched on it. On page 37 is the homework for next week.
Okay.
And I just wanted to go through it, and again, making the point that we're not always exactly on track. We'll end up where we want to be, but every team takes a little different approach. Number one, you should be up to 40% of your clients having gotten the call about the refinements in your practice. We're not there yet. I'm always going to default to doing it well rather than doing it quickly.
Thank you.
You're going to be a better advocate of your own practice having gone through the things we've gone through the last 3 weeks and getting on the phone next week rather than getting into it and not really understanding the power of what you're doing. So, number one, we're not there. We will. There are folders that we use for organization. If there's a place to order it here and a website. Now, we get nothing. We have the name of this company is On Time Supplies. You can pick that up in their email address. We have no vested interest in them. We don't get any kickback. We don't get a percentage. We don't care. Cindy Bowie went out and did a lot of work and tried to find medical folders, which is what these are, at the very best price she could. If you can find them cheaper, go ahead and do it. Don't care. These are medical folders. They'll be with you a long time. They have those tongs in them where you can use a two-hole punch, so if you drop it, nothing falls out. So if you go into ontimesupplies.com and type Supernova in the search engine, it will take you to what the folders look like. And the people at that company are very, very responsive. So that's number two. Number three, that gets into the five-star leadership model. I told you earlier in this meeting we're not going to get there, not going to do that right now. Number four is part of number three. That, again, is getting people in the right jobs within the team. And then number five, I think you all can handle. I think you've got the if you've got an intern, that's great, but you've got the capacity in your team to put these folders together that we're going to be talking about without bringing in an intern. So I think we're in great shape. The enthusiasm is good. I think you all know where you're going with this. That's everything I got to cover. Anything any of you all want to talk about before we hang up for the week?
No, Rob, I appreciate, you know, the process, and I appreciate you, you know, working with us and not – I was getting hung up on the dates and the times, and I appreciate that you're letting us – you know, this is a live, real organization. You want us to be talking with speed, passion, and confidence and doing that. So I appreciate that about this, that it's not a cookie-cutter thing. You got to do everything by the book, all or none, or it doesn't work.
Well, thank you for saying that. We got an outline. We have to have an outline to know what we want
sure.
to get done. But there are very – I can think of maybe two teams in the whole time I've been doing this where they have just gone right down the line. And,
yeah.
Again, that doesn't work. That doesn't work for everybody. So I'm very comfortable with where you are. If I felt as good about the Reds as I do about your practice, I'd have a better summer.
There you go. That's true. All right.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Talk to you next week.
Uh-huh.
Bye.